from age two, I just wanted to draw. I just wanted to create. Like, that's what I was gonna do. So it's hard for me to see my kids and like they don't know what they want to do yet. I was like, oh my gosh, you're six. How do you not know what your life path is yet? Like you should have had this figured out 4 years ago.
Welcome to the Dadwell Podcast. I'm your host, Antonio Garcia. Dadwell & Company is an independent media project at the intersection of creativity and fatherhood. The Dadwell Podcast features makers, artists, musicians, authors, filmmakers, and designers who are raising the creative bar while simultaneously raising small humans. Today I'm talking creativity and fatherhood with author and artist Jeffrey Brown. Jeffrey is the Eisner Award-winning and New York Times best-selling author of Darth Vader and Son, the Jedi Academy middle grade series, and numerous other graphic novels for both adults and kids. Most recently, Jeffrey's been hard at work on the middle grade Lucy and Andy Neanderthal series, the picture book My Teacher is a Robot, and a new Star Wars book, Rayan Pals. Jeffrey has an MFA from the School of the Art Institute, where he also occasionally teaches making comics. His artwork has been exhibited in New York, LA, Paris, and at the MCA here in Chicago. Jeffrey is dad to his two sons, ages 13 and 6. In this episode, Jeffrey talks about the ways his late father's work as a minister, while deeply religious, was also creative, curious, and underscored by lifelong learning. We discuss his transition from tourist shop handicraft to fine art painting, and how things eventually came full circle back to his childhood love of comics and writing. He shares the surprise of his firstborn, the confidence he found in his second, and how he navigates and negotiates time between both boys. He also explains his analog workflows, techniques for squeezing art into the tiniest gaps of daily routines, and how his kids influence his Star Wars stories. This conversation offers a supplemental companion to Jeffrey's autobiographical graphic novel, A Matter of Life, a collection of pivotal moments, slices of life, and intimate vignettes. If you're new to comics, I highly recommend it.
Thanks so much for sending along A Matter of Life. I know you and I share the feeling about reading graphic novels and comics in PDF form. It's never as awesome as holding the thing in your hand, but I appreciate that very much. Not just like, oh, hey, thanks for the free comic, but as a pre-read to this conversation and visibility into your life, I just found it really helpful and thoughtful and just want to say thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
What was the reception like to that book when you put it out?
I guess my first thought would be muted, just in a way that the timing of it, I think it came out right after I started doing the Star Wars books. And so then the noise from the response to something that's Star Wars completely overwhelms the response to something that's like just this more personal, quiet book. But it's a book that I feel like when people do read it and connect with it, it's maybe deeper in a way, where definitely hearing from a lot of people who, like me, grew up with varying degrees of immersion in church life and then finding different paths out of that life or staying in that life and coming to terms with different feelings that aren't the same you had growing up. I wasn't trying to write a book that like, here's what I believe or here's the answers to the meaning of life or something. You know, it's all about the questions I have and things I think about. So some people, I think, want something that's wrapped up nice and neat, or they want a story that has a beginning, middle, and end, and something that's clear. And this book is not that. It's messy. It's meant to have you think and feel more than telling you something. And out of my autobiographical work, it's probably one of the two books that I'm most happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, I definitely found it really easy to connect with. And I don't know if that's just one atheist to another or,
yeah,
but I appreciated how untidy endpoints were in it. You know, it wasn't just Jeffrey Brown's point of view on all the things with a bow on top. It was these little vignettes and kind of fragments of life. And I think what I enjoyed most was you were a son and a father in big parts of the book at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that until you have your own kids, your understanding of parents or what a mom and dad is, it doesn't really totally make sense until you are one of those things. And then things are like, oh, weird. That's why they did that or said that.
Yeah.
When you have your own and it really begins to come into focus.
Yeah, definitely. I think the one side of the book was kind of about belief and the other side was about that father-son relationship. And just thinking about what my dad's life was like as a father, and then entering that same place myself, but from a totally different direction, I think.
Yeah. I was struck by how little connection there was between the profession your dad had as a minister and then your profession as an artist and author and creative person. The book itself doesn't really talk too much about what your dad thought about that or how things that he might have done professionally or personally influenced you in that particular direction. And so I'm wondering if we can maybe begin there with a bit about your dad and how you might characterize that relationship.
I think when you talk about someone being a minister, you have this idea that occupation is about preaching the word of God, I guess, as if you summed it up. But in practical terms, aside from being at the church and actually giving a sermon on a Sunday, a big part of what I saw my dad doing, I think, was in a way creative, because he did a lot of writing. He would read texts and then write responses. And then he was also a teacher and was always really interested in learning. And I think those two sides of what I saw him doing, I think they fed into the idea of seeing someone using learning as a creative force. And so I think for my dad, teaching was a way that he was creative. Like, he would read about different learning styles and teaching styles and different ideas about how can I make a class interesting if I'm teaching. And that's a creative act. Like, you're not making a thing, but you're creating ways of doing things. And I think it's seeing that side of creativity as a conversation. So my dad's method of both teaching and preaching was more of a dialogue. And I think that's something that I've taken as an artist over time, that idea that art is not just expressing an idea to show someone something. It's a dialogue between you and your audience, and seeing how people react to your work can inform your work.
That makes sense. Different communication styles or learning styles. I think that's really interesting. Did he have any hobbies that were specifically creative or artistic?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one big thing that he did with me and my brothers was drawing with us. And in most of the time, I remember it being just, you know, when you're at a restaurant and you have a paper placemat, he would just draw with us to kind of keep us occupied. You know, his other hobbies, like, he liked working on little model railroad sets, and maybe it's a little more planned for you, but there's like some kind of creative element there, like how you're setting up the track and where you're placing things and what story you're telling. I don't remember specifically when I was younger, but, you know, he had the train set up the last few years of his life, and I remember him like having specific ideas about, you know, why like this truck was, you know, on this road, and like you could see this little town operating. Like, you could tell he had ideas about who these people were, that there's some kind of storytelling happening there. And there was just lots of little things too that my dad did over the years, where for my birthday cake one year, he drew the snow speeder from Star Wars in icing. And I've actually tried to draw in icing on cakes for my kids. And I don't know what icing he used, or if it's my memory just making it so much better than it was. But I remember it being like this really technical, beautiful drawing of a Star Wars spaceship on this cake. And I would just see those things as part of the decoration of our life.
I like that. I like that your memory of it may have made it like... really detailed.
Yeah, it's like,
and it was probably just the same like squeezy icing that everybody struggles
with. Probably really sloppy, and but I remember it like being like really straight lines, and yeah,
I equate it to like putting a presentation together for work. Like, the big presentation is delivered on Sundays, but I imagine that when you're a priest or a pastor or a minister or whatever, that you're kind of on call all the time. Mm-hmm. It, like, that people need you outside of the Sunday sermon. for whatever, you know, weddings or someone is sick, or am I accurate? Is that true? Or am I just purely speculating? But,
you know, I don't know how to quantify it. You know, it's part that I was maybe afraid to, or not ready to, or like, I don't know if I'll ever be ready to like fully dive into that aspect of growing up with my dad. But there was a feeling of absence that came with his work where he was unavailable to us. And I know that there were times where that caused friction in our family. One of the members of the congregation is sick and they need someone to visit them at the hospital. Or there's the consistory meeting on this or that night. And so, you know, in addition to like the 9-to-5-ness of the job, there was times where nights and weekends were also occupied by the job. And then when I was close to finishing high school, I guess, is when he left that specific job and then went to work at the seminary. And that's where he was really teaching. And then that changed the dynamic of that outside involvement, where now that I'm thinking about it, like, required a lot of emotional involvement with other people. But, you know, by then I was a lot older, so it was a different time.
Was it about high school that you started thinking about art as a career, or around what time in your childhood did that start to show up?
You know, when you're a kid, you don't really have a sense of what a career is. Like, you don't really understand that as a concept. You might understand a job as a concept, or an occupation as a concept even, but a career is this different thing that's encompasses a lot more of life. So looking back, I think as a kid, I just knew my life was going to be doing these things. And I didn't really understand like how that would translate into paying bills. But that was always the thing. I always wanted to grow up and make books, essentially, and write and draw.
And where did that come from, considering what your folks did?
Our house was always filled with books. And my parents were always reading. If you strip away what the content is, the basic premise is that my parents just always encouraged reading and loved books. And so it's just something that naturally I was drawn to.
And what do you think made it more visual? Like, you could have become an author, or is all written word? Like, when did the imagery start to appear?
Yeah, I don't know if I could point to where it comes from. It's just something so deep inside me. Like, and my mom's saved everything, so I have all these childhood drawings. Also, because of her OCD, a lot of them are dated, so I know, like, I have drawings from when I was 2, 3, 4 years old. And I think part of me drawing was always not just drawing pictures, but drawing stories. And comics was, you know, is the obvious starting point for, if you're gonna have stories that are visual, comics combines text and image in the most integrated way. I loved comics, whether it was comic books or the newspaper comics, and the idea of being able to tell a story, but also being able to draw while you're telling the story. It's what I always had to do.
Yeah. And so it sounds like a very well-read household, and being surrounded by books, and that comics are the great mashup of pictorial renderings and storylines, and these two things, visual storytelling, coming together. And and so at some point you decide that you're going to pursue this post high school. What was that like? Is it like, mom and dad, I'm going to be an artist, and here's where I'm headed?
Yeah. I mean, I think they knew that's where I was headed. They did always try to steer me toward the practical side of things, like encouraging me to take design classes, or, you know, it's like, you can do something with art, but make sure that you're doing something that has a practical application along with it. I think eventually they just gave up and realized, like, oh, he's going to do what he's going to do. Like, they could see that I would at least have some kind of job to support myself, whether as making money off of the art or not. For college, I actually went to a small Christian college, but I went as an art major and English minor. And so that kind of did the art side, did the writing side. But what happened was I started thinking that I was going away from the writing side and more into the fine art side, into painting and visual art. And I kind of had this vague idea that you sold paintings in galleries, but how that world worked, I had zero idea. And I think, you know, that's actually not uncommon, even for students in art school itself, to not really understand the economics and what a career in fine art can actually involve. For artists, every career path is pretty unique. And so I think that's one of the reasons why that's not something that gets taught well in art school. Or my path was basically find another way to pay the bills while you make the art. And if you're lucky, at some point, the art might pay the bills. If your goal is just making money, there are way better ways to make way more money. And so through college, I worked at this little souvenir shop called the Wooden Shoe Factory. I decorated wooden shoes and wooden salad bowls and worked at this little gift shop. It paid the bills. It gave me some practical experience and training. And, you know, people would come and they'd buy their tulip bulbs. And, you know, I had to get up and run the cash register and answer questions and do this kind of retail side of things. And then when there's no customers, I'm sitting there wood burning windmills into salad bowls, and had enough time where occasionally I could just sketch and draw in a sketchbook while I was there.
Was there a moment where the fine art career or painting or that kind of pursuit made way or room for comics and graphic novels or the book side of your work?
Well, it was kind of a long journey. By the end of college, I was working at this wooden shoe factory, and I'd gotten more and more into like this idea of what fine art was. And I was just reading all kinds of artist monographs and books of essays and interviews with artists. And after college, I had all this free time to just paint and learn about art. But my sketchbooks were always filled with lots of writing and cartoony drawing. I always looked at those as kind of not a side project, but kind of like a preparatory creative act that would lead to then I would go and paint this amazing painting that would blow everyone's mind or something. And it wasn't happening. So after 3 years of just kind of piling up these paintings in my room, just showing them to friends, that's when I decided to go to the School of the Art Institute here in Chicago for my MFA. Not necessarily with the goal of getting an MFA so that I have this MFA that has some kind of status to it, but mostly I wanted to put myself in an environment where I was around other artists to try and push myself somewhere else with my art, because I could tell that this idea that I had that at some point after college, I was going to be this painter who would suddenly be discovered and galleries in New York would be having shows of my work or something, it was not going to happen the way things were. And then it was another year at the School of the Art Institute, still kind of beating my head against this wall of painting and trying to like fit in this idea of what I thought art should be. And then finally, just as a break, I was like, you know, the most fun I had making art was when I was a kid and I was just not worried about all this stuff. I was just writing and drawing. I was just making comics. I loved reading comics. I just wasn't making them anymore at that point. And then I was like, I'll just go and make a comic. And then it just clicked.
And so what was that first comic you made where you're like, I think this might be my new thing?
It was a book called Clumsy. And it's the story of a long-distance relationship I was in. And it's just little slices of life. It was another reaction to kind of being at art school. And you're just seeing so much like high concept, meta concept work. And my idea was to just make something as opposite of that as I could. So I wanted to make something that was just totally personal and real life and raw. And then I was going to draw it like I was a kid, basically. So it's like just really rough and unedited and just vomiting all these feelings out on the page as comics. As I was working on it, I actually showed my dad at one point, and he had this really supportive response. And then just how I felt about making it, I was like, why was I not doing something like this whole time? Mm-hmm. This is really what I should be doing. And so I guess for my thesis, I self-published that book. I just had Xeroxes on the wall And then I had the copies of the actual book. And that was my MFA thesis exhibition.
What was that like after all of the buildup and painting and then to come back to something that was so familiar where you're just like, oh, why wasn't I doing this before?
It felt like I was kind of in between these two worlds, and I could see that the world I was going to was going to be like the comics world and not this fine art world.
You mentioned that your dad's response to Clumsy was really positive or supportive. As you made work, comic work, did you share it? And if so, how did he feel or understand about your career as it started to take shape after SAIC?
Again, it's another place where I've been so lucky that they were just always so supportive. To self-publish Clumsy, they actually gave me $1,000 toward the printing. And that was huge. It wasn't like a loan. They're like, we'll help you put this thing into the world. Especially considering it's a very raw, intimate look at a relationship where it's explicit in content. And even though my parents and I didn't always see eye to eye in terms of some of our beliefs, I think they understood art in a way that they can kind of move past that kind of knee-jerk reaction of this is bad or something. Like they had a little wider view of the world than some people with the same backgrounds. And once I moved from self-publishing to having a publisher, and then might get like a little mention in the comics journal or something, like my parents would get all excited, like Jeff was in the newspaper. When I was at the National Book Festival in Washington, D.C., my dad got super, super excited about that. They were always like so proud of me along the way also.
Yeah, you are lucky. That's awesome. I think a lot of people don't have that, and especially when they choose a career that is in a media that, like you said, unless you read some really good comics, it's kind of an easy thing to write off.
Right.
You've explored human stories and these kind of relationship stories and, you know, this growing body of work. And then at some point you met your wife. How long were you both together before before your first son was born?
Not very long.
Okay.
I mean, it was 5-6 months from the time we first started dating, really, before we were pregnant. So it was not an expected or planned event.
What was that like?
I mean, it was intense. It was very intense, very chaotic. I hadn't really thought seriously, as much as I knew someday I'm going to grow up and I'm going to make art. That's what I'm going to do. But for having kids, I had no clarity of direction on that. It wasn't even where I was like, I want to have kids, or maybe someday I'll have kids. Like, I just wasn't really thinking about it. Like, it was always just, someday I'll think about thinking about it. Like, that's where I think my head was going into it. And then as soon as we knew, I was like, okay, so I'm going to be a dad. I'm going to have a kid. Still wasn't thinking specifically about what that would end up meaning, but there was already this initial worldview shift in terms of how I saw myself, I guess.
And how old were you when you found out you were going to be a dad?
Let's see, how old was I? Like 31.
Okay. And so you had been out of SAIC for some time making work when this happened, right? And so I guess what was going on career-wise or work-wise when you started dating your wife and then learned of this new identity you were taking on?
So there's a couple things happening. One was that was a time when suddenly there was a lot of interest in graphic novels, and you had these bigger mainstream book publishers started giving out deals to young cartoonists, publishing contracts and book deals for graphic novels in a way that hadn't been happening previously. And then in terms of my own work specifically, like my career had kind of been doing these autobiographical books, and I had done like these humorous comics and was kind of reaching a point where I was still working full time. At that point, I was working as the music manager at a Barnes & Noble store. And I could see the time was approaching where I would be moving past having the full time day job and making a living off of the comics. And so it was just a time where I was in a really good position career-wise, actually, when we found out. And then I guess it was shortly before our son was born that I ended up getting my literary agent. The timing of it just seemed like a big stepping point in my career, as well as having this other big change in life.
Yeah, good timing.
Yeah.
So what were some of the emotions, if you can go back to that moment? Like, how did you find out that you were going to be a dad?
So my wife was on a work trip, and she called me, and I could tell she was like emotional, and she was like, "We need to talk," like serious. And like, I thought, okay, something happened. She's dumping me, or like there's something going on here. So she sat me down, and I'm like, "What is it? What's going on?" It took her a while to tell me. We weren't even living together at this point. And then she's like, "You know, I'm pregnant." And it was, in a way, it was like I didn't have any specific thing that I was imagining of what she was going to tell me, but it was like this unknowable, awful thing. And it was like almost kind of a relief. Hmm. And also like so stunned that, you know, wasn't going to process it in that moment anyway. Yeah. And then I think, I don't know, it felt like a whirlwind from that point. I mean, it felt like both a really long summer. I'm sure for my wife, it was a very long summer, being 6 or 7 months pregnant in August in Chicago, and the air conditioning goes out. But it also, like, it came really fast. Yeah, I don't know. I think emotionally, until he was actually born, it was just a lot of figuring out what it meant for me and her and our relationship, because we weren't living together. We weren't engaged, or we didn't have plans. We were just dating. So that was occupying us. The other part of it was just, I don't want to say I was like in denial until he was born, but I felt like I can't worry about it too much because it's going to happen. And so when it happens, then I'll figure things out. So it's kind of like a suspension of acceptance. I just kind of set feelings aside about what it means to be a dad until that moment. Then that's when like the emotions like really change and explode. And it's like this entirely different world for yourself.
At the birth of your son, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, he was like 2 weeks late. Then we induced, and then he came out, and it's just like, I feel different. Like the world feels different somehow. Hmm.
Can you put it into words? Could you describe that difference?
What's important doesn't necessarily change, but how things are important changes. Like when you're a kid, independence comes when you leave the house, I guess. Like you move on from your parents, and like now you're living on your own. It's kind of like whatever the opposite of that is. Now you have this person who's dependent on you. So this feeling of wanting to be protective and loving and supportive and just all those things, it's all at once and just overwhelming.
Yeah, I imagine a little baby who's like, "Dad, I know this kind of came up out of nowhere. I'm going to give you an extra 2 weeks to get cool with this idea." And then I'm going to be born after that.
Yeah.
And so you've got some exciting things happening kind of work-wise. You're sort of legitimizing your role as an independent creator. You've got a publicist. You're imagining like, maybe I don't have to work at Barnes & Noble's anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm taking on an unbelievable responsibility I've never had before, and all the wild emotions that come with this new role. That's a lot in a very short amount of time.
Fortunately, I had my wife. I don't know how I could have done it by myself. Taking on this new role as a parent and then all the work stuff, you know, and that's all that stuff is just an addition to like normal everyday life, which has its ups and downs. So the first little while was a lot of, you know, taking it day by day. Very quickly, we realized like all the books you read before, like what to expect when you're expecting and all that. It's just all kind of stuff that's not really helpful in a way, because you're just going to learn it when it happens. And the book didn't really teach it to you. Like it didn't really prepare you for what you have to do as a parent, but you figure it out anyway. So it's a never ending journey of figuring it out. Once I came to accept that, it's like, oh, that's just how it's going to be. And I think that combined with the fact that there is something to when there's so much going on, you don't have time to really get too caught up in worrying about it all. It's almost like the worst it could be is when you have quite a bit to worry about, but like still have time to worry about stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's better to just have enough time to worry about it and deal with it, or not have time to worry about it.
I feel like there's a line in Predator where someone tells somebody else that they're bleeding, and then the guy says something like, "Man, I ain't got time to bleed." And then they all just keep fighting. And I feel like that's a little bit of what it's like. I would love to see you and your storytelling and your renderings. Like, I'd love to see you tackle, you know, what does the guidebook for a new parent, what should it look like? Because a lot of the things that are out there, they're not helpful until you're in the thick of it. And once you're in the thick of it, you don't have time to sit and read a book to remind you of like what to do. You're just kind of pushing through it. So it sounds like a lot changed in that time. And then about 6 years or so after your first son was born that you had your second, I guess what was different then, maybe besides at this point living together and being married, the difference between those, or maybe what was the same between those two moments in your life?
Our relationship was a lot stronger, my wife and I. The idea of having a new baby was much less daunting because we'd been through it, and we went through it in circumstances that were not entirely ideal for various reasons. So career-wise, we're both in different places. My wife had gone back to work and was doing well, and my stuff had continued to grow. It was much less daunting.
Thinking about your creative practice and the work that you were making, what stayed the same? What changed? What did you set down in order maybe to pick up something new, or just you had to set it down because now you've got a kid or two kids? When you think about, you know, the way that you work and what you're producing.
I started out writing these autobiographical relationship stories, and then having a kid and how that changes your perspective on what's important. It's a little simple to say that that's why I stopped writing about getting dumped by a girl, but a lot of the things that I wrote about, or the ways I wrote about things, I think changed. My attitude toward life changed in some way. And I think I had probably less time to, I guess, fool around with art. Just doing random, goofy stuff with no purpose or even the intent to actually finish a project, like just playing as an artist. I think that's something that, as I became a parent, then I lost some of the time I had before to do stuff like that. It was nice to reach this point where now the art is paying the bills, but part of what came with that was now I've got, you know, a family to support. So it's not just that the art is paying the bills, but it has to pay the bills. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I've lost. And I'm still trying to like find a way to make art where I don't feel like it needs to do something else at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to ask, as you describe playing as an artist and putting that on pause or losing that as you become a parent who makes art for a living, were there any emotions as you said that out loud?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, I think people who become parents at a very young age and they lose that time of their life where they could be young and just screw around in a life sense, like, you know, just make whatever mistakes they wanted to make, you know, like they didn't have a child depending on them to be responsible. And I think creatively, there's a little bit of sadness sometimes that comes with that, with feeling restricted in that sense that I can't just do something intending for it to fail. Maybe that's part of like a bigger parent thing. Like I'm more scared of failure than I was before I became a parent.
Do your children play a role in your work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, even though I stopped doing the same kind of straightforward autobiography, I still bring a ton of my own life into my work. So my most recent series that I finished was the Lucy and Andy Neanderthal series. So it's a middle grade graphic novel series about a brother and sister Neanderthal living, you know, 40,000 years ago. So a couple cave kids. And their kind of sibling dynamic, I pull from, you know, Oscar and Simon. Like I not necessarily like specific situations, but just I kind of absorb the back and forth and the idea that some days like Oscar will just walk by Simon and just like give him a little nudge as he walks by, like, like, you know, you could have stepped out of the way. And I know Simon's kind of in the doorway, and Simon's probably like in the doorway standing, you know, like they do it to each other. Right. But 2 days later, I walk downstairs wondering why it's so quiet down there. And then like, there's Oscar just reading a book to Simon on the couch. Like, who told you to do that? Like, what went on here? And so this back and forth that siblings can have, I try to pull that into the Lucy and Andy stories in a way, like those feelings. And of course, you know, then there's even more direct ways. And like, so the Darth Vader and Son, the first Star Wars book I did, that's basically just Luke as a 4-year-old based on Oscar when he was 4, putting Darth Vader in my shoes. And then I think the last way it kind of affects things is just in general, if you look at my career, before I had kids, I was doing all this adult work, and then I had kids, and now I'm like doing all these kids' books. And it wasn't a conscious decision. It just happened totally organically and naturally.
Yeah, if your dad makes comics for a living, like already that's pretty awesome. And then if your dad makes comics about Star Wars, like I don't know if anything really tops that. Like, I hope they go to school every day feeling like pretty proud of dad.
Yes, but also like I work from home. They see me every day. I just sit around drawing. Like, I think for them it's not as big a deal as it would be if I'd never done it. You know, I don't know. I think Simon, especially because he hasn't seen Star Wars yet, he's watched bits and pieces, and then he's played with a lot of the Star Wars toys, so he knows a lot of Star Wars, but like just in general, he's not as big a fan of Star Wars yet. One of the sweetest moments that I have with Oscar is when the first Jedi Academy book came out, the Star Wars middle grade series I did. It was at his school book fair, and that was the book that he picked out to buy, which is heartbreaking. Like, it just like he was so excited to come home, and I'm like, I've got a closet full of those.
So they sent me.
Like, you could have picked. I think it's like, it's weird. I don't know. It's probably the same kind of thing, like for me when I was a kid, and my dad was one of the ministers at the church. He would preach the sermon some Sundays, and like to me, it was like not a big thing. It was just like, it was actually kind of annoying at times, like because on Sundays when he was giving the sermon, we'd have to get there earlier and this and that. And but for other people, like oh, your dad's, you know, giving the sermon this week. Like when you're a kid and it's just there, you don't really appreciate it the same way, I think, as an outside perspective.
Do you make creative opportunities available to your sons? Are they into that?
It's hard for a couple of reasons. One is that from age 2, I just wanted to draw. I just wanted to create. Like, that's what I was going to do. So it's hard for me to see my kids and like, they don't know what they want to do yet. I was like, oh my gosh, you're 6. How do you not know what your life path is yet? Like you should have had this figured out 4 years ago. So I try to be really aware of where is the line between encouraging and pressuring when it's me doing it. You know, if I'm encouraging them to draw, when is it just encouraging them? And when does it become like I'm pressuring them to do something because I do it and not because they want to do it? And so I just try to be really open to when they want to do it. You know, sometimes I'll try to get them to draw with me, but mostly I try to let them lead. But they both like drawing quite a bit. So I feel like I don't have to push them or anything. But when I think about my dad drawing with me, it was me leading the way. You know, it's like I'd want him to draw with me. Maybe that's the thing I'm sad about. Like my kids don't want me to draw with them as much as I want to draw with them.
Yeah. I think about that with my son and music. I see something as his dad and just as an adult looking at a kid's own development that strikes me as like he's particularly tuned into wanting to make music and play guitar and sing. And it's just, it's wild to watch. It's not just like, oh, he's kind of into it. Like when he comes to drawing, he only draws bands, like pictures of bands. And like, and when it comes to music, he's not just kind of bopping along to the melody. He's asking questions about like a different instrument that he hears, like some fine, tiny little instrument in the background. He'll pick up and be like, what's that? And I'm like, I have no idea, you know? And, you know, kids wake up, they want to watch Saturday morning cartoons. Like Javier wakes up and he wants to watch the DVD of Paul Simon performing at, yeah, at Central Park, you know, and he, and his face is like almost up to the glass looking at the pedals that the musicians are using on their guitars and asking me,
wow,
you know, which is questions I can't answer about music. And so on one hand, I'm like, it's so clear to me, you are going to be a musician, you know? On another hand, I'm like, he's not even 5 years old. Like, what am I, like, why am I having this, this awesome fantasy of him like rocking out to, you know, stadiums and being like the dad in the crowd,
right,
crying. you know, you've got a 13-year-old, a teenager, and so you're way ahead of me in terms of parenting and growing up a kid. But are there any tactics or just practical things you did to kind of ensure that you had the time, even if it wasn't playing or with no real point in mind or being, you know, an experiment doomed to fail on purpose, but even just kind of getting the work done? You work on multiple projects at a time, you work from home. Like there's plenty of things I think that could upend your creative process, you know? And so is there anything that you do intentionally to kind of protect time or hold space for you to be able to do the best work?
The first thing is I don't sleep. That's,
oh no.
I mean, everyone else here sleeps more than me. So I know that if I need to, or if I want to, I just have to wait them out and then they go to sleep and then I can have some uninterrupted time. I think over the years, I've gotten good at having a sense of where I'm at with different projects and how important it is to like be sequestered off. So whether that means locking the door or heading over to the coffee shop to draw instead of staying at home where the kids get home from school and then they're like, hi dad, what's going on? Like,
and do you just come out and say, here's what's going on, guys, I'm working on this thing and I need peace and quiet for the next hour and a half.
Which, I mean, it's not as effective with the six-year-old. Like, it does not register. He's like, yeah, you said that, and then I left you alone, and then now I'm back. And you're like, that was like 5 minutes ago.
Like, no sense of time.
Like, I gave you your time, Dad, like, and now I'm back. I try to be clear, and I think I've just always had a sense of getting work done all the way back. When I was in school, like in high school and middle school, I would do my homework in class and I would time things so that I would get stuff done and have time to do the other stuff I wanted to do at home. Or I think I've always had a good sense of managing workflow, and there's not really any one trick, but so like this morning, woke up with the kids and got them downstairs, and then I brought down the pages that I'm working on right now, because I know I'm adding these gray tones, and I can do that while I'm kind of sitting with them and getting them their cereal, and I can get a few pages shaded before they go off to school, and lots of little things like that of just maximizing the time, I guess.
And do you work digitally? Do you use an iPad or anything, or is everything on paper?
Pretty much everything's on paper until it's scanned, and then I might do corrections for text digitally, but for the most part, it's all analog. I like to have whatever the finished drawing is going to be, I want to have it be as close to what the printed page will be. And so actually, for a lot of my work, I draw at print size. I guess that's the other trick, is having the work be small and portable means that I can just bring it downstairs and work on it in the morning while the kids are getting ready for school so that they don't feel like they're getting themselves ready for school, even though they kind of are. Working small helps that. I don't have to have the studio set up and everything where I can only work there and have to have everything in a certain way.
What does balance look like for you as a dad and as a maker? Is that within sight? Do you feel like you have that now?
I think the idea that balance is like a finishing point is misleading. Mm. I think balance is a process. If you think about trying to balance on something, like you're shifting from foot to foot and sometimes someone else comes and pushes you and you've got to like get back on, or, you know, like mm-hmm.
it's flailing your arms wildly.
yeah. So it's the balance is something that you're always working on. So I think overall I've gotten to a better point. When I do, it's a choice. It's more like, okay, I need a break from you all. I'm going to take a break and going to get some work done because mm-hmm. that will make my head in a better place and I can come back and play with you again. Ultimately, it's, you know, I don't want to be in a place where every time the kids come and interrupt me because I'm working at home, that I'm going to be annoyed at them every time because I'm not getting the work done. And I think I've reached that point where little interruptions don't become big interruptions as much.
Does being an artist and author make you a better or worse dad?
I mean, I feel like I should just have a good answer that's not like the cheesy, well, there are pros and cons to both.
That's fine.
I mean, I think there are times when I definitely feel like, all right, this is pretty great. Like there are times when I'll go through weeks of telling my kids bedtime stories, which isn't something I ever really thought about doing, but you hear about authors and like this or that book that they wrote started out as a story they were telling their kids at bedtime, or, you know,
yeah.
I haven't gotten a story like that good, but I feel like that's a pretty great experience for them, like being able to have their dad tell them these stories that are just made up. The other thing that's really good is just encouraging them to create. I mean, I think creating and expressing feelings through art and just using your mind that way, like it has benefits to other areas of life. So I'd like to think that seeing that in me will somehow help them, even if they don't become artists in their lives or work in creative fields or whatever it might be. But I hope that creative mindset is something that I'm setting an example for them. And I think that's good.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dadwell podcast. If you were inspired by what you heard, please take a few minutes to write a review on iTunes. As a new podcast, this helps a ton and would mean a lot to me. Dadwell is on Twitter, Instagram, Medium, and all the other relevant social networks. So visit dadwell.co to find links to all of those. While you're there, you can also subscribe to the Dadwell newsletter, check out some helpful resources and books, and even cop some fresh Dadwell merchandise. Additionally, you can support this project by becoming a patron via patreon.com/dadwell. That's patreon.com/dadwell. Thanks so much for listening. My name is Antonio Garcia, and we'll talk again soon. Cheers.